This is the Morning Conversation on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Joined this morning by U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley. Senator, good morning. Thanks for being on with us.
Well, good morning, Kyle. Great to be with you.
So I guess from the kind of the beginning point here, we're going to get through a number of things fairly quickly. Out yesterday was an executive order from the administration forcing immigrants to register with the federal government, carry proof of registration at all times. Wanted to get your take on that.
Well, I tell you, first we need to recognize there's so many executive orders coming out each day, and these are big, complicated topics that everyone's just kind of in a state of chaos. In fact, for this, the question is this authority that the president even has? We've seen so many executive orders that have been outside the authority of the president, and you know, quickly the court says, well, wait, this is a responsibility for Congress to legislate in, and the Constitution gives primary control of how elections are operated and a series of other issues to the states. But on this, so we haven't had, let me put it just plainly, we haven't had time to digest this order yet, but my fear is when you start saying people have to carry identification, it starts sounding like Big Brother infringing on our privacy and our freedom.
And, of course, other questions would be what the process would be for people to register, and that would be something that wouldn't be done overnight, even if it is carried out.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, right now, we don't even have the staff to be able to do asylum hearings, which is just crazy. I mean, I've advocated time and time again that having this multi-year wait to do asylum hearings in the immigration world is just an invitation for people to come here and say the word asylum and have a script ready for their credible fear test. And so if you don't have can't even get the basics done, implementing something like this just sounds impossible. But I also want to point out, and again, I haven't digested the details of it yet, but if the heart of it is people having to carry ID, this starts to become a police state infringing on the opportunity, the privacy, and the freedom of every person.
I want to go a different direction here. Talk about the effort along with Senator Wyden and the two senators from Idaho to boost the mass timber sector.
Yes, this has been something that's close to my heart. My dad worked at the mill in Riddle when I was born, and I was very excited when Valerie Johnson did the first mass timber press, built it as an experiment there in Riddle. Came down and looked at it, and I just thought anything that promotes products that increase the use of timber, and particularly you know, Oregon being a big timber state, this is beneficial to our state, beneficial to Douglas County. So I'm doing everything I can to promote it. I have previously gotten a lot of funds for the various engineering tests that had to be done to create tall buildings with mass timber, things like how you bind the joints together, how you test for a fire and how a fire might affect a mass timber building. And by the way, it turns out they're great for fires. That is, they're very fire resistant. They're great for earthquakes, more flexible, and they a lot less energy is consumed in doing mass timber than for concrete and steel, which create enormous amount of pollution along the way. And so it's a big win in so many ways. That's why I promote it every way I can. And in this case, this is really about encouraging, in partnership with one of the senators from Idaho, Senator Risch is my partner on this, saying, hey, let's promote the use of mass timber in our federal buildings. That's a really way to showcase and increase the marketplace for products that come out of our Oregon forests.
Now, talk about the VA and how it's been impacted by the current DOGE work.
Oh, my goodness. This is scary as hell to our veterans. The administration is talking about firing up beyond 80,000 people from the VA. They all currently have like 60,000 unfilled vacancies, and so you're talking about now you got a workforce shortage now. Everyone who deals with the VA often shares stories with me of wanting to reduce the wait times and increase the services, and the shortage of personnel has been a real obstacle. This will make things so much worse, so much worse. And there's a pattern here that I'm very concerned about of a strategy of decimating the staffing to provide a key function, and then arguing that because the staffing's been decimated and we're not doing a very good job, it should be privatized. So look at this as like the first step of a two-step. First, you undermine the function of the agency, and then you argue for privatizing it. We're seeing this in terms of the firing of folks in the Forest Service. We're seeing it as a potential strategy in Social Security, undermine the effectiveness of Social Security to provide the service people need, and then say, well, it should be privatized. So I do not want the VA to be privatized. And, you know, our veterans, they stood up for us overseas. We need to be standing up for them here at home. We have an obligation to provide great service, not to decimate this service.
And could this impact and the shifting of funds also be an issue in terms of getting federal funding for a state veterans home at the Roseburg VA, or is that kind of a different pool of resources?
Well, it's a different pool, but here is the thing, is that everything's in chaos right now. The DOGE team, Elon Musk team, is just they're running computer programs to say any grant that mentions this or that or anything that falls in this category, we're just canceling them, even where contracts have been issued, which is making contractors very nervous about actually doing work and not sure if they're ever going to get reimbursed for it. I mean, they just had to have there was $2 billion of work done in one department that the administration said, you've already done it under contract, but we're not paying you. And they had to go all the way to the Supreme Court to get the government, the U.S. government, to write the checks for work already done under existing contracts. And so if this kind of take the meat axe and just chop away at anything that the government does, Social Security, National Forest, veterans health care, is not about waste. It's not about efficiency, because you don't find the waste if you're just hacking away at things with a meat axe.
What about the status of the Department of Education?
I'll tell you, I don't know. Listen, I think everyone believes that if you had a careful analysis of the department, there's probably a lot of efficiencies that could be found. But the goal seems to just be, hey, we're dismantling the thing. And this is not just an issue of breaking existing law, because if the law says X amount needs to be spent on a year and that in a particular function, then the courts have always said, look, the power of the purse is with Congress. That's the definition of separation of powers. The representatives elected by the people, they lay out the vision, and then the executive executes that vision. But if the executive starts being essentially exercising the legislative powers, deciding what's funded, what's not, what organization exists, what doesn't exist, now what they're doing, it's referred to sometimes as a strong man republic. And what that means is, while you keep the institutions of Congress and the courts, essentially you have an authoritarian government. So I'm calling on every patriot who cares about preserving government of, by, and for the people to stand up and say hell no to this infringement on the core of our Constitution.
Different topic as well here, going all over the place today with so much to talk about. What about your reaction to the Coquitlam Tribe Casino Project in Medford being allowed to at least continue moving forward at this point?
Well, it's a project that Senator Wyden and I both opposed. I opposed it from a variety of reasons. We have essentially a social contract in Oregon where we have given the ability to do casinos simply to the tribes in recognition of how they were treated in the past, all the resources they lost, all the land they lost, and so forth. And it's been a great source of income to the tribes. But when tribes start doing multiple casinos, each tribe doing multiple casinos, what you start, I think you may well kill the golden goose here, because at some point people are going to say, well, the idea was that every tribe would be able to have a casino, but if they're just going to start putting casinos everywhere, maybe this should be opened up beyond the tribes. So I felt this was not in the interest of Oregon's tribes in general, and there are specific things about this situation. The contract or the law under which there was an expanded territory for services because tribal members no longer live in a concentrated area, that was not a foundation for using that broader geographic area to say, and we can do casinos there in that broader area that overlaps with what many other tribes would consider a place that they have a connection to. So it creates, it's creating a lot of tension between the tribes. It's potentially undermining the way we have reserved the casino world solely for our tribal community.
What's it like being in Congress right now? What's the general tenor of things, regardless of which side of the aisle you're on?
Well, it is a situation we really haven't experienced this level of chaos, I'd say, since the Civil War. In general, the foundation of law is that even if there's no penalty assigned to it, the understanding is the executive will follow the law. And I'll just give you one of 100 examples. The law says that the president can fire inspector generals of a particular executive department, but can only do so for cause. That means corruption, stealing, lying, something, mismanagement, misbehavior, something of that nature. And they have to be given 30 days notice. Well, when you have 17, and by some reports 18, inspector generals who were fired overnight, it wasn't for cause, and the 30 days wasn't followed. So it's a direct violation of law. But the law doesn't say, and therefore there's a penalty, because it's the assumption of the foundation of law. And when you dismantle an agency, when the law is that, and the constitutional framework is that the agency is created by Congress and funded by Congress, and the executive then executes those plans. But when the executive starts saying, well, we'll decide how much funding we get, and we'll decide whether they even exist, I mean, all of these things undermine the foundation of law. And then there's another piece of this I think people haven't come to terms with yet, and that is the entire executive branch is now in a position where they're acting as if the law doesn't matter to them because of two things. One was the Supreme Court decision that said we found some invisible ink somewhere between the lines of the Constitution that says the president cannot commit a crime, that anything the president does, as long as it's called an executive action, is not a crime. So that means the president could walk up to you, Kyle, shoot you dead on the street, as long as he signed a piece of paper saying that he's taken executive action against you because you're a national security risk. There is no risk to him under this constitutional doctrine. Then you combine that with the pardon ability, and you have the entire executive branch saying, hey, we don't need to follow the law. And once you have that situation, which we're seeing, there's 100 cases already of the plain black and white law being broken by the administration, means we're in a period of chaos like we've never seen. And my Republican colleagues are concerned about this, absolutely, but they're also feeling incredibly intimidated. They're intimidated, they're telling us, by two things. The first thing is that Trump has said he'll use Elon Musk money to run primaries against them. That's the smaller of the two factors. The second is that my Republican colleagues, particularly on the House side, are afraid for the safety of their families. They feel like things have become so intensified along battle lines that if they raise an objection, that they will be targeted in a way that they may feel their safety or their family's safety is at risk. This is not the world we live in normally. I mean, we normally go, hey, thank God we live in a republic where you can criticize the president and nobody disappears off the street. Nobody goes to jail. Nobody worries about their family being assaulted. We are in a different space now.
All right, U.S. Senator Ron Wyden, U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley. I'm looking at two different pieces of paper here. Senator, thanks for being on with us this morning. We'll let you go vote now, but we appreciate your time.
Hey, thanks so much, Kyle. Thank you to your listeners. This is a complicated time for us as citizens. I think we really have to kind of cling to the notion that we're going to preserve our republic, the separation of powers, fight for the checks and balances, not have an acquiescent legislature or a captured court or an overly aggressive executive destroy what our founders fought for and our predecessors have maintained for now 250 years.
All right, Senator, thanks for being here. 8:46, this is the Morning Report.